Chapter 6. The rest of my school day passed quickly until my final class, Latin. Most students took a foreign language they might actually be able to use someday, like Mandarin or Hindi or Spanish. I'd decided to take Latin because James Halliday had taken Latin. He'd also occasionally used Latin words and phrases in his early adventure games. Unfortunately, even with the limitless possibilities of the Oasis at her disposal, my Latin teacher, Ms. Rank, still had a hard time making her lessons interesting. And today, she was reviewing a bunch of verbs I'd already memorized, so I found my attention drifting almost immediately. While a class was in session, the simulation prevented students from accessing any data or programs that weren't authorized by their teacher, to prevent kids from watching movies, playing games, or chatting with each other instead of paying attention to the lesson. Luckily, during my junior year, I discovered a bug in the school's online library software, and by exploiting it, I could access any book in the school's online library, including Anorak's Almanac. So whenever I got bored, like right now, I would pull it up in a window on my display and read over my favorite passages to pass the time. Over the past 5 years, the Almanac had become my Bible. Like most books nowadays, it was only available in electronic format. But I'd wanted to be able to read the Almanac night or day, even during one of the stack's frequent power outages. So I'd fixed up an old discarded laser printer and used it to print out a hard copy. I put it in an old three-ring binder that I kept in my backpack and studied until I knew every word by heart. The Almanac contained thousands of references to Halliday's favorite books, TV shows, movies, songs, graphic novels, and video games. Most of these items were over 40 years old, and so free digital copies of them could be downloaded from the Oasis. If there was something I needed that wasn't legally available for free, I could almost always get it by using GunTorrent, a file-sharing program used by Gunters around the world. When it came to my research, I never took any shortcuts. Over the past 5 years, I'd worked my way down the entire recommended Gunter reading list. Douglas Adams, Kurt Vonnegut, Neal Stephenson, Richard K. Morgan, Stephen King, Orson Scott Card, Terry Pratchett, Terry Brooks, Bester, Bradbury, Haldeman, Heinlein, Tolkien, Vance, Gibson, Gaiman, Sterling, Moorcock, Scalzi, Zelazny. I read every novel by every single one of Halliday's favorite authors, and I didn't stop there. I also watched every single film he referenced in the Almanac. If it was one of Halliday's favorites, like War Games, Ghostbusters, Real Genius, Better Off Dead, or Revenge of the Nerds, I rewatched it until I knew every scene by heart. I devoured each of what Halliday referred to as the Holy Trilogies. Star Wars, original and prequel trilogies in that order. Lord of the Rings, The Matrix, Mad Max, Back to the Future, and Indiana Jones. Halliday once said that he preferred to pretend the other Indiana Jones films from Kingdom of the Crystal Skull onward didn't exist. I tended to agree. I also absorbed the complete filmographies of each of his favorite directors. Cameron, Gilliam, Jackson, Fincher, Kubrick, Lucas, Spielberg, Del Toro, Tarantino, and of course, Kevin Smith. I spent 3 months studying every John Hughes teen movie and memorizing all the key lines of dialogue. Only the meek get pinched, the bold survive. You could say I covered all the bases. I studied Monty Python, and not just Holy Grail either. Every single one of their films, albums, and books, and every episode of the original BBC series, including those two lost episodes they did for German television. I wasn't going to cut any corners. I wasn't going to miss something obvious. Somewhere along the way, I started to go overboard. I may, in fact, have started to go a little insane. I watched every episode of The Greatest American Hero, Airwolf, The A-Team, Knight Rider, Misfits of Science, and The Muppet Show. What about The Simpsons, you ask? I knew more about Springfield than I knew about my own city. Star Trek? Oh, I did my homework. TOS, TNG, DS9, even Voyager and Enterprise. I watched them all in chronological order. The movies, too. Phasers locked on target. I gave myself a crash course in 80s Saturday morning cartoons. I learned the name of every last goddamn GoBot and Transformer. Land of the Lost, Thundar the Barbarian, He-Man, Schoolhouse Rock, G.I. Joe, I knew them all, because knowing is half the battle. Who was my friend when things got rough? H.R. Puffin Stuff. Japan? Did I cover Japan? Yes. Yes, indeed. Anime and live action. Godzilla, Gamera, Star Blazers, the Space Giants, and G-Force. Go, Speed Racer, go! I wasn't some dilettante. I wasn't screwing around. I memorized every last Bill Hicks stand-up routine. Music? Well, covering all the music wasn't easy. It took some time. The 80s was a long decade, 10 whole years, and Halliday didn't seem to have had very discerning taste. He listened to everything. So I did too. Pop, rock, new wave, punk, heavy metal. From The Police, to Journey, to REM, to The Clash, I tackled it all. I burned through the entire They Might Be Giants discography in under 2 weeks. Devo took a little longer. I watched a lot of YouTube videos of cute geeky girls playing 80s cover tunes on ukuleles. Technically, this wasn't part of my research, but I had a serious cute geeky girls playing ukuleles fetish that I can neither explain nor defend. I memorized lyrics. Silly lyrics. By bands with names like Van Halen, Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, and Pink Floyd. I kept at it. I burned the Midnight Oil. Did you know that Midnight Oil was an Australian band with a 1987 hit titled Beds Are Burning? I was obsessed. I wouldn't quit. My grades suffered. I didn't care. I read every issue of every comic book title Halliday had ever collected. I wasn't going to have anyone questioning my commitment, especially when it came to the video games. Video games were my area of expertise, my double weapon specialization, my dream Jeopardy category. I downloaded every game mentioned or referenced in the almanac, from Aklabeth to Zaxxon. I played each title until I had mastered it, then moved on to the next one. You'd be amazed how much research you can get done when you have no life whatsoever. 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, is a lot of study time. I worked my way through every video game genre and platform. Classic arcade coin ops, home computer, console, and handheld. Text-based adventures, first-person shooters, third-person RPGs, ancient 8, 16, and 32-bit classics written in the previous century. The harder a game was to beat, the more I enjoyed it. And as I played these ancient digital relics, night after night, year after year, I discovered I had a talent for them. I could master most action titles in a few hours, and there wasn't an adventure or role-playing game I couldn't solve. I never needed any walkthroughs or cheat codes. Everything just clicked. And I was even better at the old arcade games. When I was in the zone on a high-speed classic like Defender, I felt like a hawk in flight. Or the way I thought a shark must feel as it cruises the ocean floor. For the first time, I knew what it was to be a natural at something. To have a gift. But it wasn't my research into old movies, comics, or video games that had yielded my first real clue. That had come while I was studying the history of old pen and paper role-playing games. Reprinted on the first page of Anorak's Almanac were the four rhyming lines of verse Halliday had recited in the invitation video. Three hidden keys open three secret gates, wherein the errant will be tested for worthy traits. And those with the skill to survive these straits will reach the end where the prize awaits. At first, this seemed to be the only direct reference to the contest in the entire almanac. But then, buried among all those rambling journal entries and essays on pop culture, I discovered a hidden message. Scattered throughout the text of the almanac were a series of marked letters. Each of these letters had a tiny, nearly invisible notch cut into its outline. I'd first noticed these notches the year after Halliday died. I was reading my hard copy of the almanac at the time, and so at first I thought the notches were nothing but tiny printing imperfections, perhaps due to the paper or the ancient printer I'd used to print out the almanac. But when I checked the electronic version of the book available on Halliday's website, I found the same notches on the same exact letters. And if you zoomed in on one of those letters, the notches stood out as plain as day. Halliday had put them there. He'd marked these letters for a reason. There turned out to be 112 of these notched letters scattered throughout the book. By writing them down in the order they appeared, I discovered that they spelled something. I nearly died of excitement as I wrote it down in my Grail diary. The copper key awaits explorers in a tomb filled with horrors. But you have much to learn if you hope to earn a place among the high scorers. Other Gunters had also discovered this hidden message, of course, but they were all wise enough to keep it to themselves. For a while, anyway. About 6 months after I discovered the hidden message, this loudmouth MIT freshman found it too. His name was Stephen Pendergast, and he decided to get his 15 minutes of fame by sharing his discovery with the media. The news feeds broadcast interviews with this moron for a month, even though he didn't have the first clue about the message's meaning. After that, going public with a clue became known as pulling a Pendergast. Once the message became public knowledge, Gunters nicknamed it The Limerick. The entire world had known about it for almost 4 years now, but no one seemed to understand its true meaning. And the copper key still had yet to be found. I knew Halliday had frequently used similar riddles in many of his early adventure games. And each of those riddles had made sense in the context of its game. So I devoted an entire section of my Grail diary to deciphering the limerick line by line. The copper key awaits explorers. This line seemed pretty straightforward, no hidden meaning that I could detect. In a tomb filled with horrors. This line was trickier. Taken at face value, it seemed to say that the key was hidden in a tomb somewhere, one filled with horrifying stuff. But then, during the course of my research, I discovered an old Dungeons & Dragons supplement called Tomb of Horrors, which had been published in 1978. From the moment I saw the title, I was certain the second line of the limerick was a reference to it. Halliday and Morrow had played Advanced Dungeons & Dragons all through high school, along with several other pen-and-paper role-playing games, like GURPS, Champions, Car Wars, and Rollmaster. Tomb of Horrors was a thin booklet called a module. It contained detailed maps and room-by-room descriptions of an underground labyrinth infested with undead monsters. D&D players could explore the labyrinth with their characters as the Dungeon Master read from the module and guided them through the story it contained, describing everything they saw and encountered along the way. As I learned more about how these early role-playing games worked, I realized that a D&D module was the primitive equivalent of a quest in the Oasis, and D&D characters were just like avatars. In a way, these old role-playing games had been the first virtual reality simulations, created long before computers were powerful enough to do the job. In those days, if you wanted to escape to another world, you had to create it yourself, using your brain, some paper, pencils, dice, and a few rule books. This realization kind of blew my mind. It changed my whole perspective on the hunt for Halliday's Easter egg. From then on, I began to think of the hunt as an elaborate D&D module. And Halliday was obviously the Dungeon Master, even if he was now controlling the game from beyond the grave. I found a digital copy of the 67-year-old Tomb of Horrors module buried deep in an ancient FTP archive. As I studied it, I began to develop a theory. Somewhere in the Oasis, Halliday had recreated the Tomb of Horrors, and he'd hidden the copper key inside it. I spent the next few months studying the module and memorizing all of its maps and room descriptions in anticipation of the day I would finally figure out where it was located. But that was the rub. The limerick didn't appear to give any hint as to where Halliday had hidden the damn thing. The only clue seemed to be, "You have much to learn if you hope to earn a place among the high scorers." I recited those words over and over in my head until I wanted to howl in frustration. Much to learn. Yeah, okay, fine. I have much to learn about what? There were literally thousands of worlds in the Oasis, and Halliday could have hidden his recreation of the Tomb of Horrors on any one of them. Searching every planet one by one would take forever, even if I'd had the means to do so. A planet named Gygax in Sector 2 seemed like the obvious place to start looking. Halliday had coded the planet himself, and he named it after Gary Gygax, one of the creators of Dungeons & Dragons and the author of the original Tomb of Horrors module. According to Gunterpedia, a Gunter wiki, the planet Gygax was covered with recreations of old D&D modules, but Tomb of Horrors was not one of them. There didn't appear to be a recreation of the tomb on any of the other D&D-themed worlds in the Oasis either. Gunters had turned all of those planets upside down and scoured every square inch of their surfaces. Had a recreation of the Tomb of Horrors been hidden on one of them, it would have been found and logged long ago. So the tomb had to be hidden somewhere else, and I didn't have the first clue where. But I told myself that if I just kept at it and continued doing research, I'd eventually learn what I needed to know to figure out the tomb's hiding place. In fact, that was probably what Halliday meant by, "You have much to learn if you hope to earn a place among the high scorers." If any other Gunters out there shared my interpretation of the limerick, so far, they'd been smart enough to keep quiet about it. I'd never seen any posts about the Tomb of Horrors on any Gunter message boards. I realized, of course, that this might be because my theory about the old D&D module was completely lame and totally off base. So I'd continued to watch and read and listen and study preparing for the day when I finally stumbled across the clue that would lead me to the copper key. And then it finally happened, right while I was sitting there daydreaming in Latin class.